Certainly, the problem of the debt ceiling and the deficit is a more complicated problem than simply come writing up a sheet and then signing it. There is one thing that is relatively simple in terms of just signing your name to a piece of paper, and that's the pledge that many Republicans have made to the Americans for tax reform. And joining us now is Grover Norquist, an anti-tax enforcer, president of American for Tax Reforms. And for more than two decades, he's been getting Republican politicians. And Grover, I wanted to check this out with you. I read a statistic that 95% of Republican politicians have signed your pledge. Is that accurate?
Okay. Let's get this straight from the beginning. The pledge is a commitment to the American people. It is not, as you just stated, a pledge to Americans for tax reform. You can find the pledge, its actual wording, on the website, ATR.org. It is a pledge by a congressman, a senator, a candidate for that, a president, a state legislator, a governor. They commit to their voters that they will oppose and vote against all efforts to raise taxes. The Democrats have tried to make an effort that it's a promise to me personally or a promise to Americans for tax reform. And that is an annoying lie, and it's really irritating to hear when the Democrats pull that. It is a commitment to the voters by somebody running for office, and the problem that Obama has is that the American people elected a number of congressmen and senators who were elected because they promised to fight against Obama's overspending, not pay for it with higher taxes.
In fact, you are correct. Let me read the exact wording in the pledge. It says, I blank pledge to the taxpayers of the state of blank and all the people of this state, I will oppose and vote against all efforts to increase taxes. This is what they sign, and this is actually witnesses by two witnesses, correct?
Correct. It's the whole point of the pledge is to make it easy for someone who's running for office to credibly tell you what his or her position is on taxes. For the last 2,000 years of politics, people have been lying, saying, I won't raise taxes or I'll do this or that. Well, how do you enforce that? And how do you know if somebody means it when they say they won't raise taxes? Lots of politicians say they won't raise taxes, but if you actually go back and look at it, there's some weasel word in there. I'd rather not raise taxes. It's really the last resort to raise taxes. Obama's whole campaign was a whole bunch about how he wasn't going to raise taxes on anyone who earned less than $250,000 a year. 16 days into his presidency, he raised taxes on people who made less than $250,000 a year. So that verbal pledge of Obama's to only tax some people went out the door 16 days into his presidency.
Well, that's why
we asked for it in writing.
Grover Norquist, we're speaking with the president of Americans for Tax Reform. And let's bring it up to the current debate over the debt ceiling at this point. Let me kind of test out exactly what this pledge means. In certain cases, people say, well, to raise taxes is one thing, but what's being discussed here is closing tax loopholes. That's not raising taxes. Or another thing that's been said is that some of these taxes, like some of the Bush tax cuts, were meant to be temporary. So allowing them to expire, that's not necessarily raising taxes. Do you agree with that?
Two things. On the idea that the tax deductibility of your mortgage interest or the tax deductibility of state and local taxes, eliminating those are tax loopholes, tax deductions, tax expenditures. The whole idea of tax expenditures was invented by Ted Kennedy back in the 1970s as a way to raise taxes and tell people they weren't raising taxes. Of course, if you change the law and the government gets more money, it's a tax increase. And The Democrats haven't had much luck in trying to sell this idea that taking away the charitable, you know, the tax deductibility of charitable contributions, which would raise tens of billions of dollars in higher taxes, shouldn't count as a tax increase. The alternative minimum tax, which many of your listeners may be aware of, according to, you know, Obama, getting the alternative minimum tax doesn't cost you any money because it's not a tax increase. It just strips away your deductions and credits. Anyone who's ever paid the alternative minimum tax knows that it's a tax.
Well, let me just, again, push back just a little bit here, because you were referring earlier to the American people wanting not to have taxes raised. But at the same time, every single time people ask in a poll about specific programs and whether or not we should cut them, most American people don't want to see entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare get cut. They don't want to see school funding get cut. They don't want to see a lot of these programs that they count rely on getting cut. And that's the alternative. If you don't raise revenues, that means you have to cut expenditures far enough to bridge that gap in the budget.
When Obama was elected president, the budget, federal budget, was $2.9 trillion. It's now $3.8 trillion. He's increased spending by $1 trillion over the course of a year if you just reduce the increase that he's forced. We've already lost the $800 billion that he squandered on the so-called stimulus that was supposed to create 3 million jobs, and we lost 1.5 million jobs. We spent $800 million to kill 1.5 million jobs. That is not useful spending. That is not a social welfare program. That is taking money that we didn't have, and the reason we're up against this debt ceiling is because he threw $800 billion at the stimulus package, which didn't work, didn't create jobs. We lost jobs. He increased domestic discretionary spending, which is all the sort of earmark stuff, by $1 trillion over the next decade. That's the first thing they did in the first month, throw $1 trillion on the table.
To be fair, we're speaking with Grover.
We're not talking about cutting spending. We're talking about ending the overspending by Reid, Pelosi, and Obama, which is kind of what the last election was about and the next one.
Well, to be fair, this is nonpartisan. The Bush administration raised discretionary outlays 3.5% in 2004, 7.8% in 2003, over 13% in 2002. If the Democrats are responsible for this, so are the Republicans. But again, if you don't raise taxes, that means you have to make cuts that the American people say they don't want. Then how do you solve this problem?
Well, the spending interests don't want to give that up. But actually, when you look at polling data where you ask people, do you want some free government gift? Sure. Would you pay $50 for it? No. And a matter of fact, if you ask people, would you pay higher taxes for these projects, the answer is no. The Obama administration's already ended Medicare. When you take a look at what they've done, Obamacare squeezes out Medicare and puts everybody on Medicare, eventually into Medicaid. So the idea of protecting Medicare, that went out the door when we passed Obamacare.
We're speaking with Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. In a moment, we're going to speak with Representative James Clyburn with another opinion as well. He's a Democratic congressman from South Carolina. Mr. Norquist, do you think we'll reach an agreement on the debt ceiling in time, or do you think the defaulting is not a bad thing?
Well, the only person who can default on our debts is Obama. If he says that if we don't have enough money, the first thing he'd do is default on our debts, that's his decision. He's also threatened our servicemen. He has very odd priorities. If the first thing he doesn't pay is our servicemen and the debt, but if he wants to do that, that's what he says he wants to do. If we go there, get to the point where we don't have more debt capacity.
Unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there. Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. Thank you so much. Now let's take a look at some other stories we're following at 15 minutes after the hour. President Obama will hold a news conference to talk about alternative solutions for a debt deficit deal today. The president will not meet with congressional leaders, though. Instead, he's asked them to talk to their own members and come up with spending cuts both parties can agree on. We're going to talk more about this in a minute when we speak to Democratic Congressman James Clyburn of South Carolina. The ban on members of the military being openly gay could come to an abrupt end later today. A judge is considering a request from the Justice Department to allow a gradual rolling back of the policy, known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Last week, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the policy is unconstitutional. The law to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell was signed by the president in December, but the Justice Department says the military needs time to change the policy in a, quote, orderly fashion. In California, teachers at public schools will be the first in the country to include mandatory lessons on gay and lesbian history. In Italy, an austerity budget has been rushed through the Senate. It cuts more than $60 billion over 3 years. Speaking to the BBC, deputy leader of the Italian Senate, Emma Bonino, says the austerity package doesn't go far enough.
We need to put the debt under control, but this package is not enough. And you cannot put that under control if you don't promote growth.
Although I imagine those of us in the United States are envying the speed with which they got that through the Senate. A second vote later today is expected to adopt those spending cuts. You hear that, guys, in Washington? The United Nations has welcomed a new member. South Sudan will be the 193rd member of the United Nations and the world's newest country. You're listening to The Takeaway. We're going to hear more about negotiations in a minute with Democratic Congressman James Clyburn. But first, we want to hear from you. What do you think lawmakers should focus on in order to improve the economy? Comment here. Call us at 8778-MYTAKE.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.